Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who? Star Wars or Doctor Who?
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars episode 12. This is another special midweek episode, and this is the final part of my three-part series where I've been chatting with the professional comic book artist Eric J. If you haven't been hearing any of the earlier bits and pieces I've put together, I'll give a brief explanation. A couple of weekends ago, I sat down on Skype with the pro comic book artist Eric J. Eric is someone I've really admired in the comics industry for a long, long time. I first became aware of his artwork in a comic title called Rex Mundi. If you've never read it and you like murder mysteries and the occult and alternate Earth type scenarios, especially an alternate Earth in the early 20th century, then Rex Mundi might be just up your alley. I was just immediately struck by his artwork, and that just so striking, and lots of use of ink and the way he was drawing and the content he was drawing too. I mean, this murder mystery set in an alternate Earth in Paris, France, in particularly the early episodes, or the early issues, I should say, was just stunning. And Eric and I have been in touch ever since. I've often bought pages of his artwork. We've been friends on Facebook for forever. And we haven't actually spoken. So this conversation a couple of weekends ago on Skype was the first time we'd spoken voice to voice. And in theory, I'd got him on the show because he has drawn a Doctor Who comic in the past. He drew a comic when IDW had the Doctor Who license. The comic was called A Room with a Deja Vu. Quite an interesting story there too. And again, I own some artwork from it. And I thought, you know, well, Eric's a Doctor Who artist. I'll get him on the show because obviously it's either Star Wars or Doctor Who. I'll get him on. We'll chat for an hour or so. You know, I might do a little teaser on the Sunday show and then put out the full interview the following Wednesday. Well, that's a good idea in theory, but we spoke for over 3 hours. So I sat down and looked at this 3-hour conversation and I thought, okay, well, there's a big section where we talk about the comics industry and learning to draw and the tools of the trade and all sorts of little anecdotes. And I thought that's sort of its own thing. And then there was a section where we spoke about Star Wars, and then there was a section where we spoke about Doctor Who. So what we've done, if you've not heard recent episodes, is I pulled out the Doctor Who chat and made it into its own podcast. I played that last week. And I pulled out the Star Wars chat and made that its own podcast. And again, we played that last week. So what we have here is what's left of the 3-hour conversation. And it's basically Eric and I talking about, as I said a moment ago, drawing, the comics industry, art in general, you know, plus whatever came up at the time. So you might not be a Doctor Who or Star Wars fan. You might have been put onto this by a friend who said, hey, here's a good conversation, just a general conversation with a well-known comic book artist. And if that's the case, welcome. Welcome to Who Wars. If you have been following all along, what you've heard with the Star Wars and Doctor Who conversation is actually the end of our conversation. Now we're going back to the start of the conversation, if that makes any sense. And you will notice, as we get towards the end of this conversation, we start creeping towards where we start talking about Star Wars, and that's where the conversation ends. So, without any further ado, this is myself talking to one of my favourite comic book artists, Eric J. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Who Wars, Eric.
Thanks, mate.
I guess it might be interesting for our audience to know a little more about you, what titles you've worked on, maybe what you're working on now. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I got my start about, what was it, almost 14 years ago now, doing Rex Mundi, which was originally a self-published title that we ended up doing through Image and then went over to Dark Horse. I've worked for DC, IDW, Moonstone, Image, Xenoscope currently. I do a lot of covers for Xenoscope. That's probably, like, if you want to talk about what I'm working on currently, that's it, you know. Mainly doing covers these days, although I'm working on getting back into interiors. I kind of burned out a little bit on interiors, like, not long ago. I kind of bit off more than I could chew and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things you get into it, and I don't think people really get like what kind of a grind it is doing interior pages for a comic book, especially, you know, when there are other considerations like, you know, financial.
Yeah. I can,
you know, sometimes isn't the best, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. Now we'll come back to your comic career, in just a moment. Before we go any further though, I do have to ask the question I'm going to ask everyone I interview on this show. Okay. Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Okay, I'm going to go a little off topic and say Star Trek, but...
Oh, no, Eric!
No, it's important, though, because, I mean, like, you get into these, like, big, like, you know, debates, like, what's better? And it's like, man, it's all good. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
You don't need to, like, you know, like, I you know... I've been involved in like some really weirdly heated arguments, you know what I mean, about like Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, you know, and it's just like, dude, just chill. You can like all of them, you know what I mean?
Well, that's right, and that's what we try to do on the show. I mean, Who Wars, we're trying to do Star Wars and Doctor Who, but yeah. I sometimes wonder if people do have a favorite. For me, it changes day to day. I think, oh, I'm leaning towards Star Wars today, and then the next day I think, oh no, why was I doing that today? It's all about Doctor Who.
Well, I gotta be honest with you, out of the two, between Star Wars and Doctor Who, I would definitely lean heavier towards Doctor Who, but I'm a little like you. It kind of depends on the day, you know what I mean? It kind of depends on what I'm in the mood for, because they're distinctly, you know, different properties. Yeah, as far as that goes.
But. Yeah, which way are the winds blowing on a particular day?
Right, but I think like on the average day you catch me, I'd probably be more of a Doctor Who fan.
Alrighty. Yeah,
but again, that's not to denigrate anything, you know what I mean, because I love them all.
Exactly right,
geek form, you know what I mean, I love all of it.
Yeah, why limit yourself?
That's exactly right, man. Seriously, what the hell, dude? Well, that's the other thing. They're also very distinct, you know what I mean? Like, Star Wars is in no way the same kind of thing as Doctor Who, which is in no way the same kind of thing as Star Trek. I mean, there's just like, they're all very different, you know what I mean? Why limit yourself? Exactly as you said, you know?
Exactly. Well, we'll come back to Star Wars and Doctor Who at the end of the interview. I might not have any Star Trek questions. I haven't prepared for that eventuality.
That's fine.
So now that we know who you are and where you stand on that, let's go back in time a little. Were you a natural artist growing up? Were you one of these kids with a pencil in their hand before they could talk, or did it come later? Was it something you really had to work at?
Oh, no. I'm exactly the former. We'd go to like family outings and stuff like that, and I'd be bored as hell, you know what I mean? And the way that like sort of my pacifier would be a piece of paper and a pencil, you know, and you know, loved comics, you know, since I can remember, you know, since before I could even read. I mean, like, I learned how to read reading comic books, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that's the thing, like, it's so funny. And I don't want to you know, say anything like, you know, horribly controversial, but, you know, it's like, I've heard, you know, people talking about like Chris Claremont, you know, and the verbosity that he has in his comics. And you know what, if it weren't for that man, my vocabulary would probably be half of what it is today. You know, I mean, literally reading X-Men comics, you know, during, Claremont's run, like, gave me more of my lexicon, if you will, you know, than anything.
Yeah, look, I'm pretty much the same. I think, you know, all sorts of reading I did when I was a kid, especially comic books, taught me a lot of words I might not otherwise know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So was it reading the comic books that made you think, hey, someone in an office somewhere is drawing this, I'd like to draw this too? Or was there some kind of thought around the comic books that made you want to draw, or did it come for some other reason?
It was sitting down reading the comics and just knowing that someone had to draw them, you know what I mean? And and like, I don't know, from my earliest aspirations, you know, and I wasn't the kid that wanted to be a fireman or a you know, astronaut or anything like that. I wanted to be a comic book artist as early as I can remember. And I'd be lying if I didn't say some days it feels a little bit like, you know, be careful what you wish for, because you might just get it. But no, it was, you know, it was very much like, you know, I want to say, and I might be wrong on this, but I want to say it was like Neil Gaiman was out there, you know, talking once about, you know, comic books being the modern day myth, you know?
Mm.
And that's, I don't think I had a, you know, I don't think I could have put my finger on it that succinctly, you know what I mean? But that's kind of what drew me to it, you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to, these guys were out there and they're creating these stories that, you know, fired my imagination, and I wanted to do that, you know?
Mm. Well, I was going to say, you mentioned X-Men earlier. Mm-hmm. What else might have inspired you artistically during your earlier years?
Oh, man, everything. I mean, I hate to give you I guess it could be argued a cop-out answer, but it's not. I mean, it's true, you know what I mean? Like, I think some, you know, you get people when they go, you know, they come up to you and they say, like, oh, I can't draw a straight line. Well, hey, that's excuse me, pardon me. That's not true. I mean, you know, most artists can't draw a straight line, you know what I mean, without aid, you know. But I think the difference between people that, you know, can draw and people that can't is the way that they look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm out and about, you know, I'm kind of checking everything out and seeing how it goes together, you know what I mean? And I don't know, and I honestly don't know how much of that's natural inclination and how much of that's been, you know, learning, you know. Mm. What I mean, I think there had to have been, you know, a natural inclination at some point.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, whether you thought it was a natural thing. I don't know whether you've spoken to other artists about this, whether you just grew up looking at the world differently to other people or something else.
Well, there's, you know, it's funny, there's a book out there that's pretty famous. I can't remember the name of it right now. It's like something like, it deals with exactly this, you know, about how artists see, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And how to see like an artist, you know? And I wish I could remember the name of the book right now, but it's a fairly prominent, you know, art book. And I remember I actually bought a copy, and I'm like sitting here reading it, and I'm going like, dude, I already do this.
Well, then you're an artist.
Yeah, I guess, you know what I mean? It's just like, I think on some level it is inherent. But it's definitely one of those things. You know, it's, you know, people talk about drawing and talent and whatnot, and yeah, talent gets you out of the gate, if you will. But it's a skill like anything else, you know what I mean? It has to be honed. It has to be practiced. It, you know, you have to, you know, so that ability to see, you know what I mean? That skill, you know what I mean? To look at things and see how they're put together and everything like that. There might be an inherent aspect to it, but it definitely is just like anything else. You know what I mean? It's something that you have to practice at. It's something that you have to focus on, and develop. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think for people with natural talent, I think it's an inherent thing, but I don't think it's not something that you can learn. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And that's the other thing, you know what I mean? People talk about like, well, my brain just doesn't work that way. And it's like, well, I don't know if anybody's brain works that way. You know what I mean? Like from the jump, I think even if it doesn't, you know what I mean? It is definitely one of those things that you can, you know, you can learn about, you can study. And, you know, it's like Henry Rollins said, like, you know, like he's out there and he said, like, I don't have any talent. I just work harder than everybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, yeah, man, that's what it's all about.
And we see that in sport too. We see people who are naturals and others who had to really work hard at it, you know, and mm-hmm. they end up as good as each other, but they have totally different stories.
Right.
Or,
well, there are the guys that are naturally talented that don't need to work that hard to achieve, you know, results that, you know, someone that maybe not as naturally talented can get if they work harder. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm not discounting talent, but I'm saying that I think hard work is more important, you know what I mean, than natural talent.
Oh, definitely. And you read, I don't know, articles with musicians, and they talk about how they sat in their bedroom for all their teenage years, you know, playing scales on the guitar. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're, you know, the rock god they are today. Mm-hmm. Was it similar for you? Did you stay in a lot and just draw, or, you know, is there a sad story in the background here of a of a youth spent locked in your bedroom?
I don't know if it's sad. No, you know, I mean, like, definitely, like, when I was younger, my days and nights, you know, would be spent, like, laying on the floor in front of the TV, you know, with the family around, and I'd just be drawing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My parents getting f***ed at me because I wasn't answering them, you know, because I was, like, so involved. They'd ask me questions and I wouldn't answer, and I literally didn't hear them because I was just like so involved in what I was doing, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, so immersed.
Yeah, and it's not sad. It's not like, you know, Eric had no friends, therefore he, you know, lived a life. No, you know what I mean? Like, I definitely, you know, I was out with my friends on the block, you know what I mean? It was, yeah. But, you know, you can't be out, especially when you're a little kid, you know what I mean? You're not out all hours, you know what I mean? Like, we had a curfew, and as soon as I was home from the curfew, I was down drawing, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's, you know, that's how I passed the time when I couldn't be out, you know, raising hell with my friends.
Yeah, and it's not...
A BMX bike.
Awesome. And, you know, it's not sad. I mean, for people like me, when we look at someone who's spent all these years drawing and can now draw phenomenally well like you can, or someone who's played all those guitar scales for years and is now in a rock band, we think, gosh, why didn't I do that with my time when I was growing up?
Well, you know what it is, though? It's not, you know, you get back to the idea of, like, hard work, you know what I mean? It's not, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm sure, you know, yeah, I'm sure there are people out there. And as a matter of fact, I've heard many of the story, you know, many stories about people that do have, like, sad lives that led them to, you know, getting involved in one of these things. But, you know, honestly, I think most people that end up doing like I did, like, you know, spending all my time drawing, or, you know, playing the scales on the guitar or whatever, it isn't or writing, you know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily like a sad thing. It's just, you're just so drawn to it, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, like, for me, drawing, like, especially when I was younger, it's actually interesting. Like, it's different now that it's my profession, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather be doing just about anything other than drawing more often than not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's just because it's my job, you know what I mean? So I'm like, you know, when I'm off, I want to be off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I'm weird that way too, because I know a lot of my friends that are like, oh, no, I just always still want to draw. And I'm like, dude, okay.
Yeah.
But no, but what I mean, like, but what I mean is, like, all those hours that I spent drawing, like, I literally didn't want to be doing anything else. You know, there wasn't anything else on my, you know, that like you could entice me with, you know, like, that's what I wanted to do. That was how I had fun. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Look, I can totally relate, because when I was in my teens, I was making a Doctor Who fanzine. It was back in the days of actual paper fanzines.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and I would make a paste-up where I'd, you know, print out text and I'd paste pictures to it, double-sided, then go down to the local library and photocopy it on one side, then photocopy it on the next side, and I'd make these little zines. And then I became a journalist. And mm-hmm. I was using all those skills in journalism. But, you know, when I was a journalist, the last thing I wanted to do was go home and try my hand at writing a novel or blog or whatever. I just didn't want to write at all.
Right. And I mean, but see, that's the other thing, though, is like, you know, especially when you're doing it just sort of for the love of it, you know. And that's the other thing, you know, like, if I, for whatever reason, go, you know, a couple days without drawing something, you know, I actually literally start to get in, like, a bad mood. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not fun to be around. You know what I mean? Because, like, I feel unproductive. I feel like I haven't done anything. You know what I mean? And it's become, like, so tied to my sense of self, you know what I mean, that it's kind of, it's probably actually a little unhealthy. I mean, but you know, it's like you were talking about making your zine. You know, when you're done, when you've got it there in your hands, you know what I mean? That feeling of like, look what I did. You know what I mean? Like, I created this, you know, that's like, ultimately, that's the thing, you know what I mean? And I don't think that that's unhealthy at all. I think that's like one of the best things, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. It felt like magic, you know, once you finally stapled it all together and had this little zine in your hands and you could hand it to someone and they'd look at it like, you made this? Yeah, I made this.
That is exactly it. It's like magic. And that is exactly it. Created from thin air, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, there'll be people listening to this who are fans of comics in general. They might doodle themselves. They might look up at the moon some nights and think, how does it all happen? So, you know, without trying to give career advice, because I guess everyone's path is different, how did you end up drawing in the comic industry professionally?
Well, we've already hit on quite a bit of it. You know, started, you know, from when I was a kid, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That was how I had fun. And I just, you know, I was just always trying to get better. Like, it's an interesting story. I just was telling the story, as a matter of fact, it's fresh in my mind, the other day to some of my friends. I remember when I was, I could have been like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, maybe not even that old. And I remember drawing Superman and I drew Superman and I had all, and I drew him. He was, you know, posing, you know, flexing his biceps, you know, and then, in the, you know, Power Man pose or whatever the hell they call it in bodybuilding. So, you know, he's got his arms up and he's like, you know, and he's flexing his biceps and he had like 5 biceps, like one on top of the other. And I showed it to my dad and I'm like, look, Dad, look what I did. And he's like, what are these? And I'm like, that's his muscles. He's strong, you know? And my dad, like, you know, lifts up his arm and he goes like, yeah, there's only one muscle there. And I'm like, I saw Popeye. And when he ate the, when he ate the spinach, like he got like 5 biceps. And you know, my dad, like, you know, being the dad that he is, you know, was like, yeah, that's a cartoon. It doesn't really do that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's just like one of those things, you know, it's like, you're always just trying to get better. You know what I mean? And
the next day there was a book on.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and the next day there was a book on physiology waiting on your bed when you got home.
No, there wasn't. But I definitely, you know, and oh my God, how easy must it be for kids these days? You know what I mean? Like, got resources at their fingertips that we could only dream of back in the, you know, late 70s and the 80s and early 90s, you know. But yeah, I mean, like, I've got books that I bought when I was, you know, I'd get my allowance money and I'd, you know, we'd go to like hell, it wasn't even Barnes and Noble at that point, it was like Walden Books, you know.
Yeah.
And I just head to the art section and, you know, try and see which one I could afford, you know what I mean, and pick it up. And I always said, like, even now, you know, like, I still look at books and I'm like, and I'll buy them. And the idea is, like, if there's even a sentence in the book, you know what I mean, that I didn't know, like, it was worth my purchase, you know. That's the thing, you know what I mean? So, like you say, you know, just always trying to get better. And anyway, so getting back to how I got it started, you know, living in San Diego is quite the boon, you know, having the Comic-Con here. Especially, you know, I started going to the con when I was 17, so like 1989 would have been my first one.
What were the crowds like then?
Oh my God, so much better. I'm serious. I go to the con nowadays, and it could just be because I've been to so many cons now, not just San Diego, but, you know, around the country. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because, like, I remember being in Chicago, my first Chicago Comic Con or Wizard World Chicago, I guess it was at that time. It was the year after they changed it, and a bunch of friends, you know, I'd made a bunch of new friends, you know, at Wizard World Chicago, as we did when early on. It was great back in the day, you know. We'd go to conventions, Arvid and I, and we would just marvel at the new friends that we made, you know, over the weekend. every time.
Yeah, now for listeners, that's Arvid Nelson, who you co-created Rex Mundi with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we were running around and we were with a friend of ours, one of our new friends, and I don't exactly remember who it was, but they were, you know, more of a con veteran than we were, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was lamenting having, you know, con fatigue, you know. And we were just so busy having such a great time, we couldn't imagine how you would be bored of con. Like, how could you be bored of con, you know what I mean? Or like annoyed by con or anything like that.
You were like a band their first time on the road, you know, maybe touring with Bon Jovi or something.
Absolutely. No, that's a perfect analogy. And you know, so now here it is, you know, 14 years on, and yeah, god, man, like, I mean, like, I still walk the hall, but it's with definitely less enthusiasm than I had, you know, back in the day. And it's and the crowds now in San Diego is like, I love it for the spectacle. I hate the actuality of it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like if you can be there and see it and kind of be not in it, then it's fantastic. It's like, oh my god, look at that. You know what I mean? But once you're in it, it doesn't take very long for me in my advanced age to get horribly annoyed, you know. And you know, and I think that has something to do with it too. You know, I'm 42 now, you know what I mean? It's a lot different when you're 28, you know, or 29,
yeah,
or younger, you know, running around with, like, you know, 150,000 people around you, you know, like.
Yeah, I get you. You know, I'm 39 myself. So when I started reading Rex Mundi, which is where I first came across your artwork, I think back to how I was at that age. Yeah, I was a lot more sprightly myself.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, as much as I feel like I'm defying Father Time, you know what I mean? There are some things, you know what I mean, where I'm definitely creeping into the crotchety old, you know, curmudgeon aspect. But anyway, yeah, again, so, like, I am King Tangent, by the way, so.
No, that's fine. I want to go off on another tangent, or a slight tangent. Do you have a favorite con, then? If San Diego is so big and crowded, do you go to one even now and think, oh, this is okay?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, like, San Diego is always going to be my favorite. You know, I mean, that's just, it's my hometown con. It's the, you know, I guess now New York is bigger than San Diego, which, you know, was a little sad, but whatever.
Yeah, I heard that the other day. It surprised me.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm actually surprised that it took this long for it to overtake it. You know what I mean? Honestly. I mean, New York's New York. You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do? You know, San Diego is always going to be my home, you know, my favorite, but I do, I went to the Phoenix Con, a few years ago, and it was just a nice kind of, it was funny because, like, I want to say, like, an hour before I got there, they had, the fire marshal had shut it down because there were too many people in the hall.
Wow.
Which is something that we had to deal with in San Diego, you know, a few years ago as well. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an, it, well, I got there and they'd open it back up, so it wasn't a big deal. But I had, you know, a lot of people were running around being annoyed, and I was like, well, yeah, that's what we had to deal with, you know. I don't know, it was about 10 years ago in San Diego when it really started blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm walking through this con, and it's like, and there's just so much room to move in the aisles and everything like that. And I'm like going, really? This got shut down by the fire marshal.
Wow.
But it was nice, you know, it was really nice. It was, you could just, like, walk down the aisles and just kind of peruse what was going on and, you know, go up to your friends at the booths and say hi and, you know, spend a couple minutes chatting and not feel like you're intruding, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Or get in the way of them interacting with their fan base, you know, which is, you know, I mean, that's why we're there, you know, obviously. So you don't want to intrude on that, you know, but at the same time, it's, sometimes walking in the aisles, especially like at a con like San Diego, that's the only time you get to see them, because like once the con's over, you know what I mean, everybody's kind of spreads to the four winds. It's one of the good things about San Diego in that, you know, downtown is pretty concentrated, so it's, you know, it's not like you can go that far, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're bound to run into somebody, but it's spread enough that there's just a ton of people that you just won't see, you know, during the weekend. You know what I mean? All your best intentions, you just won't hook up with them. Wizard World Chicago, that was one of the things we liked about it, was that it, you know, it's not actually in Chicago, it's in Rosemont, you know, which is like this little suburb of Chicago.
Okay, you know, I've not been to that one.
Okay, so it's Arvid and I used to laugh about it, because it's like Rosemont is this town that was built up to be a convention center. You know, it's a convention center with like, I don't know, five or eight you know, major hotels, like all within a couple blocks of each other, you know.
So it's like a university town, but replace university with convention center.
Yeah, exactly. And there's literally nowhere to go. You know what I mean? Like the only way you're getting anywhere is either by car or by train. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Most of the people, you know, that's, you're going back to your hotel room and then you're hitting the bar, you know what I mean? Or one of the few, you know, one of the few restaurant choices, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So the likelihood that you're going to sort of like randomly run into people is, you know, like orders of magnitude higher, you know what I mean? So it's kind of nice from that standpoint.
Yeah.
If you've got somebody you want to see, you know what I mean, you're much more likely to just run into them, you know what I mean, at Chicago, at Wizard World Chicago. I don't know about C2E2. I haven't been there yet, because C2E2 is down actually in Chicago, and this is the same thing. I haven't been in New York Comic Con yet either, but I just imagine that it's one of those things where like the con's over and it's in New York. It's worse than freaking San Diego. So, you know, just good luck. You know what I mean? Like randomly running into somebody is just not going to happen in New York. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think anyway. I mean, I could be horribly mistaken, you know?
Well, you know, at these conventions, you're there at some of them working, you're sitting at a booth, you might be sketching for people. Do you have any stories from cons? They might be like weird fans who have come up, or just other interesting things that have happened while you're sitting there at a booth watching the world go by? Or do you have mostly respectful fans?
You know, I do. I have pretty amazing fans, I have to say. You know, that no one's... Yeah, no, I don't really have any bad stories, to be honest with you. I mean, like, the bad stories generally are like, you know, you find a lot of people don't like to do portfolio reviews, and I get it. You know what I mean? Having been the person trying to get reviews, you know, you're coming in and you're nervous and you don't quite know what you want. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. If you want a critique or if you want a job, you know what I mean? Like, obviously the thing you want is a job, but,
So for people unfamiliar with this, this is people coming in with their portfolio and showing it to a publisher, maybe, or
publisher, artist, editor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And trying, if they're showing their portfolio to me, you know, they're coming to me to get tips, you know what I mean, like a critique, you know what I mean, because there's no way I can give them a job. but you know, we do, you know, we artists will do that, you know what I mean. I kind of famously got a review done by Neil Adams, and I you know, friends of mine, you know, we all sit around talking about, like, you know, the horror stories of a Neil Adams, you know, portfolio review.
He's pretty brutal, is he?
Oh, he is horribly brutal. But the thing is he's good. It's good. You know what I mean? You have to be made of sterner stuff, though, you know, to take it. Hmm. But if you can, it's absolutely what you need, you know? I remember I was standing in line to get a portfolio review from Neil one year. And he did about three reviews before he finally got to me. And I could hear every one of them, you know?
Yeah.
and I step up to him and I plop my portfolio down in front of him, and he goes, "Okay, you heard all of those. Are you sure you want to do this?"
And was he saying the same stuff to each of them, or was he saying unique stuff to each?
No. And that's the thing. You go to a lot of people and, you know, there's a lot of sort of generic advice, you know what I mean? Like, and because it's generic, don't get me wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean it's not applicable, you know? It's just that it's sort of the same stuff that you hear all over, you know, work on your storytelling, work on your anatomy, work on your dynamism, you know, blah, blah, blah. But Neil actually took the time, you know, for every single person that was, you know, in front of him to actually look at the work and take things and specifically point out things that they needed to work on. And not just like say, like, you need to work on this, but give an example of like how they might work on it. I mean, that's like, that's why I say, like, yes, he's brutal. He is brutal. And by brutal, I mean that he is, he's the Simon Cowell.
Oh, wow.
Of artists that might review your portfolio, you know, which is not a bad thing. It's, he's telling you the things that you need to hear, whether you want to or not, you know?
Yeah. So you stood your ground. You said, no, I'm going to stay here and hear your critique. What did he have to say?
Oh, he had mostly complimentary things. He told me to work on my folds and the fabric and stuff. He's like, he puts his arm out and he kind of points to his, the folds in his, he had a long sleeve shirt on, you know, and mm-hmm. he's like, "See this? This is poetry, you know?" And I'm like, "Damn, you're right. That is poetry." I don't know. I had some buildings that I'd drawn and like the bricks, and he's like, "Hold out your hands. Show me how big a brick is." And so, you know, I show him like a normal brick. He's like, "Now, how big are the bricks that you drew here?" And I'm like, he's like, "Dude, seriously, they're probably like 3 feet tall." And I remember talking to somebody else and I told them that part of it. And they're like, well, he doesn't know like what they built that particular building with. It could have been 3 foot bricks. And I'm like, "No, dude, no, they weren't." I'm like, if I had made the choice that they were 3 foot bricks in that particular building, absolutely, you're right on. But realistically, what I did was I drew normal bricks that were 3 foot tall bricks, you know, and he was right on. And his thing, and he, you know, I've heard good things and I've heard bad things, and I will never speak ill of Neil Adams, you know what I mean? Because my brief interaction with him has only been, you know, straight up honest and positive, you know? And you know, he straight up said, he's like, "Well, you are competing with me for jobs."
Yeah, that's right.
"Therefore, you need to be as good or better than I am, you know?" And he's like, "Look at your work right now and tell me if you think you're better than me or as good as me, you know?" And I'm like, "Yeah, no, I'm not." And he's like, "You're not, but you could be, you know? So, you know, go get to work."
Do you find yourself sometimes using some of these lines with artists who come up to you now?
Yeah, I think you digest everything, you know what I mean? I think that the positive, you know, even if they were painful, you know what I mean? Like the ultimately positive experiences that you have, you tend to emulate, you know what I mean? So definitely, I'm sure I could be accused of recycling some lines that I've heard, you know, here and there.
Yeah. And speaking of when people do come up to you, what's the talent like out there now? Do you think more people are drawing and trying to do this and or are they, you know, dwindling from what they were 10, 15 years ago?
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't done a portfolio review in a couple years now. So I couldn't speak specifically to like what's going on now, but I mean, you know, I think just based on like, you know, the books that are out there and you see the wide array of styles, you know, I have to think that we're entering in, or we entered into a couple years ago, you know, a sort of really neat age, in terms of comic art. And it's interesting and a bit weird to say that because we're not, you know, like the I want to say like the mid to late 90s was like the end of the artist driven portion of comics, you know. It's, I'd say, like, since, you know, the, since at least the early 2000s anyway, it's been, you know, this industry is pretty decidedly writer driven, where, you know, artists are damn near interchangeable, you know.
Right. Why do you think that is? Is it just less good writers out there and lots of good artists, so the good writers win because there's fewer of them to go around, or?
You know what I honestly think it is, and it hurts me to say this.
Go on.
It really hurts me to say this, but I honestly blame it on Image, early Image, not current Image, and hell, not even Image from, you know, when we had Rex Mundy going there, but early Image, when the, you know, when the big guys broke off from Marvel, you know, and went over there and all decided that they could write their own books, you know what I mean? And, you know, and I have a lot of love for, at the very least, a couple of those guys, you know, both personally and professionally. But, you know, I don't think that you can argue that those books were, like, well, by and large, anyway. I think, obviously, there's the exception that, you know, here and there that proves the rule, but those books were living and dying on their art, you know, not on the stories. And they kind of put a fine point on it that writing isn't just something that you just do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you just because you can draw comic books doesn't mean that you're a good writer, you know? And I think that the comic book buying public kind of keyed in on that pretty quickly. You know what I mean? That good writing and good story is what we're all here for. You know what I mean? Like, the pretty art is a helper. And that's maybe even like oversimplifying it. You know what I mean? But for the sake of our conversation here, that's ultimately what it is. You know what I mean? The story is king. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The art comes second. And, you know, in a truly successful book, the story and the art will meld seamlessly. And to be honest with you, I think that's where we're at now. You know what I mean? Like, you see the really great books out there these days. The art isn't cookie cutter. You know, the art serves the story. The art serves the title. You know, it's unique to that title. And you know, I think we're starting to get to a point where maybe, you know what I mean? Like, the pendulum. You know, I have a problem with extremes. You know, I had a problem even as an artist. You know what I mean? In the 90s, when it was like, you know, people were following artists regardless of what, you know, the book was, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't even a lot of times know who the writer was, you know what I mean? On the book that they were now collecting because their favorite artist was drawing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I had an equal problem, you know, when it was, you know, they couldn't name the artist, but they could absolutely name the writer. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be an equilibrium, you know, and maybe, just maybe, we're getting to a point now these days, you know what I mean, where there's the equilibrium, where the team is king, you know what I mean, not one or the other.
Yeah, I think that's a healthy way to be. When you were talking earlier about, you know, writers versus artists, I was thinking of film, and I was thinking, you know, a film can look really bad and be cut together really bad, but if the story's great, it's good. And then you have something like a Michael Bay movie where there's no story at all, but it looks fantastic, and, you know, lots of people might go and buy it or buy a ticket to it. But the reviews are terrible because there's no story.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think finding that balance is key.
No, I think that's, you know, there was a... what movie was that? There was like a... Do you recall there was a Harrison Ford, Brad Pitt movie?
Oh, was Brad Pitt in the IRA or something?
Yes.
Exactly. And Harrison was a cop.
Yeah, and they I remember when they were doing press for that movie, and Brad Pitt, you know, sitting there talking about how there was no script. like it was like an achievement, you know what I mean? Like they made this awesome movie with no script, you know what I mean? And lo and behold, the movie sucked, it tanked, and if we were to look it up on Rotten Tomatoes right now, it'd probably have like a, you know, a rotten, you know, rating and everything like that. And it's like, dude, you know, script writers aren't there just to give you an idea of what to do. You know what I mean? They're fairly important in the process as well, you know what I mean? Like, regardless of what you, the actor, the big name actor or the big name director or whatever think, you know. But I think you're right though. I mean like a film is a little different in so far as like I think, you know, directors, like, you have to have a singular vision, you know, for the film to really sing, you know what I mean? And I mean, like, and we used to talk about it back in the day about comic books. I mean, you know, like a good artist is that way, you know what I mean? Like for comic books is like a good director, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Take the script that he's given and because he's the costume designer, because he's the set designer, because he's the cameraman, you know what I mean? Like he sort of by definition, the director of the comic, you know what I mean? And, you know, kind of have to, you know, have a good handle on what you're trying to achieve, you know what I mean? And frankly, part of that is knowing what your writer is trying to achieve, you know what I mean? Like, you can't be at cross purposes.
Exactly. And do you find some writers write their scripts better than others? Like, some of them you read, it's almost like a novel, and you're like, oh my god, I can see this. And others, it's like pulling teeth?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm certainly not going to name names.
But, oh, of course not.
But yeah. It's funny, I will name this name. So like Arvin and I, you know, when we were working on Rex Mundi, he used to give me scripts and he'd give me these really detailed scripts, like really detailed scene descriptions and whatnot. And at least early on, he'd like ask me if that was like too much information or whatever. And cause I mean, like it can be, you know what I mean? Sometimes like, you know, people like describe a scene and they're describing everything 360 degrees, and, you know, and I'm like going, you do realize that there's a picture playing, like I can't show what's going on behind them, you know what I mean? but
the image was so clear in his head, I guess, he was putting it all down.
Yeah, well, the thing that was, and maybe it was just that he and I had just such a good, you know, sort of being of one mind, you know, if for lack of a better term or phrase, that, you know, I knew what he was wanting, you know what I mean? And I always told him, my mom, you give me just as long as I know what we're showing, you know what I mean? Like, as long as I know what's important, you give me all the information that you want, because that allows me to go in and go, we don't need this, you know, that's good flavor, but we don't need it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or add something that he might not have thought about, you know what I mean? Just based on, you know, what he described, it was good, you know what I mean, as far as that goes. But yeah, there are some people that just, they write a scene and you have no idea what the focus is, you have no idea what's important, you know what I mean, and they've literally written like what everything is in the room, you know, for instance, you know. And it's like, yeah, that's great, you know what I mean? But honestly, what do I need to know? And so that's kind of where some of the difficulty comes in, you know.
Are there days where that's frustrating? You think, oh, I need to know more.
Oh, or, my God, yes.
Or are there days where you go, hey, I can do what I want here because it's not very well defined?
Well, okay, so like for me, I'm very conscious. Like I want to be on the same page as the writer. You know what I mean? Like my nightmare is that the writer sees the pages that I've drawn and goes, what the hell did he think I was trying to say to him? You know, I mean, that literally is, that's my nightmare. You know what I mean? Like, I want the writer, whoever that might be, to be pleased, you know what I mean, with what I've done. And I want to be able to be proud of it, you know, as well. And so from that standpoint, if I do go, well, I can do whatever I want because this is so ill-defined, it's usually in frustration and anger. not, there's no joy in it. You know what I mean? Like, it, I'm not the writer. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mind, like, adding, you know, adding a thing here or there. You know what I mean? It's like with Rex Mundy. You know what I mean? It's like Arvin and I spent hours and hours and hours and hours on the phone hammering out, you know, what Rex Mundy was going to be, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, probably a million emails and whatnot, you know, but at the end of the day, I've never once, and I will never take credit for having written Rex Mundy. Like, I will say that if, had I not been on the book, had I not been the original, you know, co-creator on the book, like, it wouldn't have been what it is.
Mm.
But Arvid absolutely, excuse me, Arvid absolutely wrote that book. You know what I mean? Like, And that's the thing. Like, I'm the artist, he's the writer. You know what I mean? If I have to, you know, interpret what you've written, you know, in a way other than, you know, standard interpretation as I understand it,
mm-hmm.
then no, I'm not happy. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not to say, like, you know, tell me exactly what to draw, I'm just going to be your art monkey and do it. Like I said, there is interpretation involved. It's just, you know, if I feel like I'm writing the scene, then you haven't done your job, and no, I'm not happy about that.
Yeah.
You
know? And I'll just throw in here for a complete fanboy moment, Rex Mundy remains one of my favorite comic books, and I own a ton of pages from the early days, as as you know, because I bought them off you. And there's just something really, really magical, particularly about that first half of the run. It's almost like you're a Lennon-McCartney kind of partnership with Arvid there.
Yeah. And it, complete with, later, how to put this? Not struggles, but yeah, I guess struggles. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess it happens to a lot of partnerships.
Well, yeah, I think in our case, it just came down to, you know, we, especially later in the run, we were both under a lot of pressure. We both had bitten off quite a bit. I don't think people, you know, it's not self-publishing, but it's damn close, you know, doing a book through Image, you know. So beyond writing and beyond drawing, you know, we were wearing a lot of hats between the two of us. And it just became, you know, we had a lot of pressure on us, a lot of stress, you know what I mean? And it manifested. And I mean, you know, to this day, though, you know, Arvid and I are good friends still, you know what I mean? Like, it obviously didn't, long-term didn't affect us too badly, you know, but yeah, definitely, you know, the stress got to us, you know, towards the end, but yeah, it was especially early on and towards the middle, it was magical, man. It was amazing.
Yeah. And it was to us as the readers as well. Just an awesome comic.
That is fantastic here. Thanks. I really appreciate it. You know, it's funny. I look back on those early pages, and I got to say, and this is just for me, is like, you know, the perfectionist, like, overly, you know, actors don't like to watch themselves in movies, you know, artists never should look at their old stuff, you know.
Mm.
But I look back on some of those things and I cringe.
Oh, I bet you do. It's like when I look back on earlier episodes of this podcast, I think, oh, what was I doing?
Right. Yeah. It's just, you know, you learn so much, you know what I mean, as you go along. And it's like, I definitely think I was good enough at that time, you know, to be published. But still, I still look at, I mean, you know, I'm sure Jim Lee looks back at some of his early Alpha Flight stuff and goes, oh.
Yeah. And I guess if you don't, you're doing something wrong.
True. You know, if you look back at your old stuff and you go like, man, I lost the magic. time to move into, I don't know, bricklaying or something.
Yeah. So what's been the most rewarding series you've worked on and why? It might not be the biggest and best, but it might be rewarding for some other reason.
You know, I don't know. I mean, like, I have pretty positive feelings towards everything I've done. If you have to pin it down, it's probably Rex. You know, it's my first. Mm-hmm. It was the longest run I've done on a book. And, you know, it was mine. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I haven't done anything else that's mine, if you will. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that's always probably going to be, like, you know, the one.
Yeah.
I did a book called Fly with Raven Gregory, through Xenoscope a couple years ago, and that was really fun. That was a good book. You know, it was a personal book for Raven. I think it's one of his best work, best works, if you from a writing standpoint, because it was a personal story. You know what I mean? And it afforded me the opportunity to work in two different styles throughout the book. You know, so that was just a ton of fun. You know, sort of working in my normal, like, semi-realistic style, but then getting to do, like, these flashback sequences that were just full-on cartoony, you know?
Yeah.
That was good from that standpoint. And then, you know, get to work on Doctor Who.
Well, I was hoping to get around to that. You know, I was going to ask, was there any sort of IP you got the call, you know, come and do an issue or a few issues, and you've got, oh my god, I get to do X.
Oh yeah, that was it.
Yeah,
you know? and it was actually the best and worst. It was like totally Dickensian.
Okay.
Because it was very literally the best of times and the worst of times. Because I get this email from Chris Ryle and says, "Hey Eric, do you want to work on an issue of a one shot of Doctor Who with Rich Johnston?" Hell yeah, I do. Are you kidding me? Yes, I do.
Mm.
And then within a couple days, if not, it wasn't the same day, but within a couple days, I get an email from Eddie Braganza at DC going, "Hey Eric, do you want to work on a Justice League of America thing?"
Oh.
And the Justice League thing was only 10 pages, you know, it was in the Justice League Giant. But I'm like, I can't say no to either one, you know what I mean? So I'm like, I take them on and I'm sitting here trying to work on both of these things at the same time. And I'm not the fastest artist in the West, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
So that was a hell of a challenge.
But I tell you what, you did some great work there, because you actually sent me one of those Justice League pages, and it was awesome.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I'm not joking. I mean, like, I'm getting to work on Doctor Who and Justice League of America, you know, in the same, like, at the same time. I'm like, could life be better? You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, well, yes, it could have been better because I could add more time, but.
Yeah, so it was a bit of, like, feast or famine. It all came at once.
Oh yeah. It was fantastic. I had such a good time, you know, doing both of those stories, you know. And, you know, doing the Doctor Who thing is like, oh well, I guess I'm gonna have to watch every David Tennant episode.
Yeah, well, that's no hardship.
Oh yeah, hurt me, you know.
Now, in terms of the actual process, I know you and many other artists are now doing a lot of digital work, and uh-huh. I guess that's a bummer for those of us who like to collect original pages of artwork. But forgetting that for a moment, why do it? What are the advantages, and I guess what are the disadvantages to doing that?
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, I have a lot of friends that sort of straddle the line between fine artists and comic book artists, you know, that are dead set against digital, you know. And just like, it's heresy, you know, blah blah blah, you know. But for me, I I'm a geek, you know what I mean? Like, I've loved computers my whole life, you know what I mean? Like, pretty much my entire life I was like waiting for this day to come, you know what I mean, where I could draw on the computer. You know what I mean? It's like, I remember like, you know, when I was younger, like, you know, being on the computer and going, yeah, but can I draw on it?
It's like, sure, here's Microsoft Paint.
Yeah, exactly. And draw with the potato, you know. Trying to draw with a mouse is not a pleasurable experience, let me just tell you.
Mm.
And then, you know, and then you get the Wacom tablet and it's like, well, you can draw with this. And it's like, yeah, okay. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of having ants crawling all over your body.
I live in Australia, so I've had most bugs crawl on my body.
Yeah. I mean, like, just infestation, like, just all over you.
Maybe
know?
Not an infestation, though.
Yeah. Well, that's what it feels like. Or I don't know that I've actually had, like, you know, thousands of ants on me, but that's what I imagine it feels like, is trying to draw on a Wacom tablet by looking up at the screen you know, away from what your hand is doing. You know what I mean? Like, it's, oh God, I just even thinking about it, it's giving me willies.
It looks unnatural even to me as a non-artist.
Oh yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. You know, and I get it from the, you know, I know a lot of my colorist friends have been working on Wacom tablets forever. And I just got to say, like, I think it's a different thing. I think it's just a different process. You know what I mean? Mm. And it's therefore it works better, you know, for them. But actually doing the drawing, it just never worked for me. And then, you know, along comes the Cintiq, and it's like, lo and behold, you can draw right on the tablet. You know, it's got a monitor. You just draw on the monitor. And the technology's gotten so good now that it's, you know, that it's pretty damn natural, you know. And
did it take you long to adapt?
No, not at all. It there was maybe, I'd say, a couple weeks, you know, of kind of getting the hang of it. But you get in there and you just and everything starts clicking. You get the right setup, you know what I mean, and it's. You know, I do now, like, you know, I've been doing, you know, sort of pen and ink commissions just to keep my, you know, traditional chops up, if you will, you know. And it's a very different thing. I mean, like, drawing traditionally and drawing digitally, I mean, like, the thing is, like, they're just tools.
Yeah.
There was a great cartoon that was going around on Facebook, like, not long ago that was... had a guy that was drawing on the computer, and it was, you know, had like thought bubbles, you know what I mean? And they're all, you know, line weight, you know, light and shadow, you know, form, and, you know, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All the things that you normally think about when you draw, you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
This drawing on the computer is no different than drawing on paper, you know what I mean? Like, yes, there are some things that make it easier, but ultimately you have to have the same knowledge, you have to have the same skill, because it's just another tool, you know what I mean? And but the second part of the cartoon is you know, what everybody thinks that I do, you know what I mean? It's like, computer, draw me a house.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, that's not what it is. But I will say this, I mean, it's incredibly freeing. You know, I've had talks with you know, my good friend Jason Alexander, you know, and he's just a phenomenal, I mean, phenomenal artist, you know, like fine art as well as comic books. And you know, talking about the happy accidents that happen when you're doing traditional art, you know. And those don't really happen as much when you're they can. There's a tendency when you're drawing digitally, because you can make it, there's the ability, because of, you know, undo and resizing and, you know, all this stuff, to, like, you know, make something, you know, as close to perfect as you can, you know what I mean?
Mm.
I don't know that that's the, at least for me, that's not the goal, though, you know what I mean? Like, the goal isn't to make something, like, you know, perfect, you know, it's just to make it. Those tools for me are just make it more freeing. You know what I mean? You can go in there and you can just kind of futz around, you know what I mean? And if it doesn't quite work, you know what I mean? Like, you can do this and tweak that, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And you never, you know, you're not afraid to put down any line, because you can just, you know, you can undo it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just very freeing. And the other thing is, as far as that goes, I was just talking to my friend Jim Chadwick about this, like, a while ago. Jim's a great editor at DC, doing the digital stuff for them. You know, we were talking about this, and he was asking me very much the same question. Like, what's the difference between working digitally and working traditionally? And I'd say the biggest thing for me, I think I mentioned, I'm not the fastest artist in the West. So, like, the big thing for me is, like, when I started drawing Rex, for instance, I wasn't an inker.
Right.
I kind of learned how to ink while I was doing Rex Mundi. And
there's a ton of inking in a lot of those pages.
Oh, yeah, dude. I was like, I discovered ink, and I was like, yeah! Josh Dysart did, like, the foreword for our first step, for our first trade, and I'll never forget, he, like, throws in this line, you know, about me showing him pages from the book just dripping, like, still dripping in ink. You know what I mean? It's like, like there, like the implication being that there had been so much, there'd been so much ink on the thing, it still wasn't dry.
Yeah, exactly. I think some of mine still aren't dry now.
It's very possible. It's very possible. But, you know, I mean, like, I like black, you know what I mean? It's like, it's, I like, it's kind of a lost art, you know what I mean? The black placement in comics with the advent of, so many amazingly talented colorists, you know, it's actually something I struggled with for a little bit there. Trying to leave things too open, you know what I mean, for the colorist to come in and finish. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, it's doing, you know, a disservice to me. You know what I mean? Like I'm not doing my best work because I'm not doing my thing. You know what I mean?
Mm.
You know, and then from the other standpoint, you know, and it's like I was reading something not long ago, that was getting back to this idea of interchangeable artists, you know. It's like, unless you have a really distinct style, you can get lost in the shuffle, because if you're sort of drawing normal comic book style, because the colorists are so amazingly talented, but also because they all kind of do similar things, you know, it leads to a bit of a, leads all the art to kind of become a little generic, you know?
Yeah.
And so me not doing my thing, you know what I mean? Like, my thing happens to be dunking the page in ink and letting the white be whatever doesn't dry.
Yeah. Well, particularly for Rex, it did suit the book as well. Like, the tone of the book and a lot of the scenes were at night. So it just fitted so well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely was something that, you know, was called for, but... You know, even without that, though, you know, it's a hallmark of, like, sort of traditional comic books, you know, the black placement, you know, and it's one of the things I'm doing a run of covers for Xenoscope's Grim Tales of Terror books that are sort of throwbacks to the old EC Comics covers, you know.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been a lot of fun for me. But what it's also been is a little eye opening, because, you know, I don't do a lot of interviews these days, because I got to a point where I didn't enjoy them, you know, so I kind of actively avoided doing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're enjoying this one.
Oh, yeah. No, no. I'm having a great time. No, I'm having a great time. It's just I think part of the reason, though, is because, like, I don't do this kind of thing. Like, I don't talk about comics, you know, in my personal life very much, you know. Like, it's funny, like, my friends know what I do, but we rarely talk about it, cuz just, I don't know, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's not what I want to do.
Yeah. I get you.
Yeah, so I mean, so they know what I do, and we talk about it occasionally, but never, we don't really go in depth on it, you know. And I think that serves me for situations like this, because I don't do it a lot, you know what I mean? Like, the times that I do indulge, it's actually, you know, it's actually very pleasurable now. But, you know, especially back in the day when we were doing a lot of press for Rex Mundi and some of the other books I've done, it's just, man, you just talk about yourself and it just gets really old. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I'm not that interesting, guys.
Well, you see it when people are promoting films. Sometimes they seem a bit bored with the interview, and the interviewer says, oh, well, they were very boring, or they were very rude to me, or whatever. But the truth is, they've said the same thing like 50 times that day.
Exactly.
You know, no. I was working with Paramount Pictures a few years back, and I'd sit in on a lot of interviews when, you know, stars would come out for junkets for films, you know, big films. You know, Watchmen was one of them, for example. And I would see them say the same thing over and over and over again. And partly because journalists ask the same questions over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, you know. It's like, I think the other thing as far as that goes is, you know, I get it. There are some guys in this industry that are very there can be some egos involved. You know what I mean?
Mm, yeah.
And it just never, it never ceases to amaze me. You know, it's like, dude, we're just drawing comics. You know what I mean? Like, we're just making comics. It's not like we're changing the world. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's entertainment.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, like, I get that, like, I get that people want to know about us and everything like that, and that's great, you know what I mean, but we're not that important, you know what I mean, like, nothing that we have to say is, you know, gonna rock the world, you know what I mean, like, we're just dudes that sit in our rooms, or our offices, or our studios, or whatever you want to call it, it ultimately is our rooms, you know, thinking up flights of fancy, you know what I mean, to entertain people, you know, and
yeah, you serve the work, the work doesn't serve you so much.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it, you know, so it's like on a daily basis, that's what I do, you know what I mean, I sit around and I draw, you know what I mean, it's not that exciting.
Well, and that's
then I get out and I have a beer with my mates.
Yeah, which I often see photos of on Facebook.
There you go, exactly, you know, it's like, go sing some karaoke so I can relive my glory days of being in a band.
Well, that's a nice segue into my last question on the comics industry, that is, before we get to Star Wars and Doctor Who. We've passed the hour mark in the interview. Okay. So, where do you see yourself and comics 5 years from now? I guess we might have touched on this a bit with you talking about covers. And is there a passion project for you out there, or just an IP you might really, really like to be involved with in the future?
In 5 years, hopefully I am drawing a monthly book because I have finally figured out how to do that. which is actually exactly what I'm working on right now. I'm working on getting my style down to a point that I can do it reliably, you know, fast. You know what I mean? And that might be a weird thing for a vet to say, but you know, I mean, there are guys out there, you know what I mean, that, you know, will readily admit that they can't do a monthly book. I'm one of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm working really hard to change that, you know what I mean? Like, I want that. And you know, hopefully, if we're talking in 5 years, you know, I've done a run on, like, a DC or Marvel property that, you know, has people talking, you know what I mean? That'd be a nice thing, you know what I mean? Alternatively, or maybe additionally, I've got several stories of my own that I've been working on for, you know, a few years that I'd like to actually finally get to, you know, see to fruition, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And so those, and you talk about passion projects. You know, it's funny, I'm doing, you know, so like right now, in addition to the covers that I do for Xenoscope, I'm doing sort of, you know, sample pages, you know, like we do, you know, mm-hmm. to show that we can draw this character or that character, you know, and it's like, you know, you get into the industry. It's like, I hate to tell you newbie artists out there, but you're still going to be doing sample pages even after you break in.
Yeah.
Which is actually something that I you know, like, man, it is such a long, circuitous route, you know, all the things that you learn, you know,
yeah,
along the way. Because I remember, like, it's sort of at the height of my popularity, if you will, I got some incredible opportunities and took advantage of a few of them, but a boneheaded mistakes on my part, you know, let a couple of them slip through my grasp. And like one of them was, I was asked by a fairly incredibly prominent writer if I wanted to work with him on a DC property.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me? It was like literally my favorite book. And I was like, hell yeah, man, I definitely do, you know? And I'm like, so send me like a sample script and I'll do up some sample pages and to send to your editor to see if you'll hire me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I got the most kudos for, especially with Rex Mundy, was like how I drew buildings and like city scenes. And,
oh yeah. Paris looked beautiful in Rex Mundy.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. And as a matter of fact, side note, one of the best things that ever happened. You asked me about interesting stories about people coming up to the booth. I remember one year we were at San Diego Comic-Con, we're working the booth, and this couple came up from Paris, and they were like, have you spent a lot of time in our city? And I'm like, I hate to admit this, but I've never been.
And did their jaws hit the floor?
Their jaws hit the floor, and they just looked at me in like wide-eyed disbelief, you know, like, and then they just both, you know, just, you know, it was one of the best things ever that happened to me, because they were just gushing that like I nailed it, and you know, and that they couldn't believe that I'd never been there, and I've never felt better, you know. I really honestly don't think I've ever felt better about my job performance than that one review, you know, by that couple from Paris, because I felt like I had done this amazingly beautiful city justice.
You did, man. And for me, it was like, I mean, I was obviously in my 20s, you know, I'm only a few years younger than you when I was reading it. And mm-hmm. I would look at some pages and look at the detail in them, and it was like I was a kid again. I hadn't done that in comics since I was a kid, like looking at the page and looking, look at this little detail down here, look at this. Oh my God, he actually took time to draw this? And, you know, it's only one tiny bit of a big page. And
hence my not being the fastest artist in the West.
Hey, it's worth it.
You know, I like to tell myself that it is. But anyway, so... getting back to this amazing thing that happened, you know, so I'm very excited. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get to draw my favorite comic. And I write back to this very famous writer, who had so nicely asked me to draw a book for him. And I go, hey man, so I'm kind of known for drawing buildings. Do you need me to draw like city scenes in these sample pages?
Yes.
Which is like the most ridiculously stupid thing like you could ever. He just like writes me back and he's like, yeah.
This is because of where this particular comic was set, is it?
Yeah, amongst other things. And mm-hmm. But mainly it was just like, dude, seriously, are you asking me like if you're going to have to draw it for the book, why don't you freaking draw it?
Yeah. You know?
Samples. I have never felt so stupid in my life, and needless to say, it fell through.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was just like I have been kicking myself, you know, for years ever since. It was horrible, you know. It's and it's one of those things though, you know what I mean? Like I think every person that breaks in, you know, goes through like stages of proneness, if you will. And it's like, you know, so you go through the stage, you know, you break in and you think you're hot.
Yeah.
And now you're all of a sudden you're on the same level as all these guys that you've admired for, you know, years, and you look down on people that are at the same point that you probably were at 6 months ago. You know what I mean? Like, and then you kind of get in and you kind of get this idea that like, yes, it's a big deal that you broke in, but it's not that big a deal, dude. You're not that big a deal, you know? And you kind of look back on your early days as a pro and you kind of cringe, you know, because you thought you were all that in a bag of nuts. And then you kind of get a little farther into your career, and even that middle stage seems like you were too haughty. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was going to say, I've used a lot of musical analogies in this podcast for some reason, but I think of a band, you know, maybe two indie bands, and then one of them takes off and they look down on another band which is where they were 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, you know, another year or two or three from there, that breakthrough doesn't matter so much. It's what other albums they've put out, and maybe they haven't done quite as much as they thought they would. And, you know, it's all relative sometimes.
Yeah, and I think the main thing you eventually get to the point, and I kind of do think it's regardless of what your stature is, you know, whether you're A-list, B-list, C-list, you know, whatever. I think you just get to the point where you finally gain some maturity and you're just happy to be working, you know, and you're just grateful that you get to be doing this amazing thing that you dreamed of when you were a kid. You know what I mean? Like, like, I think it comes full circle. You know what I mean? Like, you get back to that point where, like, you're not as caught up in the novelty of being a pro. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you get back to this idea that, like, yes, well, maybe actually you get back to the novelty that you're a pro. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you get to be more appreciative of the fact that you get to do this thing that you dreamed of. You know what I mean? And you don't take it for granted. You know what I mean? Because that's definitely a leg of the journey as well, is that point where you kind of take it for granted. And, you know, and then you come to the journeyman, you know, point where, like you, like I say, you know what I mean? You're just kind of thankful that you get to do it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you've got dream projects, but ultimately you're just happy that you're working. You know what I mean? That you get to do this thing that you love, you know?
Yeah. I hear you. All right. Well, look, that was an awesome overview of your career. I mean, there's still many other questions I could ask. I mean, when you were talking about drawing on the tablet, I was thinking, is it tactile like paper? And, you know, I still didn't get around to that point in your life where you might have thought, you know what, I can actually draw comics for a living. You know, it's not just a hobby. You know, all these questions I still didn't ask, but I'm conscious of time. So if you wouldn't mind, shall we motor on with some Doctor Who and Star Wars?
Sure.
All right.
Let's do it.
Now, you said you liked Doctor Who possibly more than Star Wars at the start of the show, but it does depend on the day.
I'd say the month.
The month, okay. have you been watching... Oh, go on. I'll go on.
Crazy, like, you know, Star Wars trip for, you know, like a long, you know, like I said, like a month, you know what I mean? Like I started, I had never watched it, you know, and I started watching The Clone Wars on Netflix, you know what I mean? Which was like a big deal for me because I hate the prequels.
Yeah. Like most people of our age.
Right. And I actually really did enjoy, you know, Clone Wars. And so, you know, binging on that took, you know, a while because there's like, what, 7 seasons, you know? So
it's quite a lot. Well, Eric, people at home might not realize this, but we've been talking for 3 hours.
That is fantastic, man.
And I can't thank you enough for the amount of time you've spent with me today. I can see this content being spread across several episodes in different ways. We've just got so much, and we've covered so much.
That's great. It's been so much fun, Rob. Seriously, thank you, man.
Oh, no, thank you. I mean, we've known each other online for a long time. We've spoken many times, but we actually haven't done it voice-to-voice. So It was probably fitting that the first time we spoke, it was for 3 hours.
I believe I agree with you. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been a real pleasure, man.
Oh, good. You know, I wanted to cover the comics, but I also wanted to get into Star Wars and Doctor Who, and we've gone all over many other things as well. It's just been incredible.
Oh, yeah. I honestly feel like we could probably go another couple hours and still not cover it.
Oh, yeah, look, give me a 5-minute break. I'll go grab a beer, you know, now that it's midday. And and away we go.
I would, if I had a beer at my disposal, I'd probably join you. And then we could get in some really interesting content.
Oh, hell yeah. I might have to start a whole new podcast, though, for that content.
Smoking Hoover.
Well, look, from sunny San Diego, is it still sunny now?
The sun is just starting to set.
Okay.
It's not quite beautiful yet. We're not quite at twilight just yet.
Not quite. Okay. Well, it sounds like it was a beautiful day, and without being cheesy, this was a beautiful conversation.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I agree completely. I had so much fun.
Oh, and before we go, Eric, where can people get in touch with you on social media?
Well, you can always follow me on Facebook. It was one of the easier ones. It's facebook.com/EricJ, or on Twitter. My handle on Twitter is @EricJ_art.
Very cool. So people, if you've liked what you've heard, get out there, follow Eric on social and see what he gets up to next. Hopefully it's a Doctor Who comic or a Star Wars comic, but that's just my fantasy. Thanks again, Eric.
Man.
Cheers.
Cheers, brother.
All right, this is Rob back in the studio now, a couple of weeks after recording that conversation. It brought back some good memories for me while I was going through making some edits there. And look, I hope you really enjoyed listening to that. As I said in the intro, as we started to creep towards the Star Wars and Doctor Who conversation, it cut off, so there is an edit. It might have seemed weird at the time, as we just started to talk about Star Wars, it suddenly cut to like our closing thoughts. That's because those Star Wars comments and then the Doctor Who comments that came after have already been played last week in two separate podcasts. If you've not heard them and you like Star Wars or Doctor Who or both, why not go back and have a listen to them? There's some really interesting conversation in both of those, particularly when I get Eric talking on the topic of potentially doing a Star Wars comic one day or doing some more Doctor Who, and, you know, which Doctors might be easier to draw than others, and, you know, which of the Star Wars comics coming from Marvel next year out of the four would he like to do. All kinds of interesting stuff. If you've not heard it, please do go back and have a listen. There's some really good stuff in there. Anyway, it's kind of sad to put an end to this trilogy of chats with Eric J, but I guess all good things must come to an end. I know after we hit stop on the tape, Eric said, you know, it'd be fun to chat again in the future, so who knows? Maybe Eric and I'll get together and talk Doctor Who or Star Wars or something in the near future. That would be quite cool. I'd enjoy that. I think he would as well. And all that's left to say is thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting the Who Wars podcast. If you like what you hear, please tell a friend. That's probably the best, you know, compliment you can pay us. Tell a friend about us. And if you really want to do us a favor, jump on iTunes and give us a rating and review. Just one line. Just a one-line review. It'd really help us bump up in the rankings there. All right, I'll get out of your hair now. Until Sunday, when we have another full episode of Who Wars, I remain Rob Irwin. Take care of yourselves. Bye for now.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.